Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with a sports program for you today, starting with curling. Curling is a pretty popular sport in Wisconsin. In fact, in the United States, Curling Association makes its home in our state. And we've got a couple of guests for you to talk about curling. One, 2018 Olympic curler Becca Hamilton. Becca, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
With her, Jenna Martin, manager of social and digital media for the U.S. Curling Association. And Jenna, welcome to you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having us, Larry. We're happy to be here and talk some curling.
Great to have you with us. So as you listen to these two expert curlers, I hope you'll join in. What would you like to know about the game of curling? What have your experiences been with it? I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you could send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you, so give us a call. Jenna, let's start with you. Let's talk about the United States Curling Association and how it came to be in Stevens Point.
Yeah, so that was kind of by chance. David Garber, our former CEO and USCA president, is rooted in Stevens Point, so it was kind of a natural fit to have the headquarters and office there. So now we have six staff located in Stevens Point, and a couple of us sprinkled remotely, which isn't proving to be too much of an issue, especially given the current pandemic and state of the world. So that's kind of how we came to be in Wisconsin and Stevens Point, and it's working out pretty nicely for us.
Yeah. Tell us what the U.S. Curling Association does and what is its kind of its charge.
Yeah. So the USCA is the national governing body of wheelchair curling and also curling within the United States. So as an NGB, our goal is, of course, to promote and grow curling at all levels of the sport. So from grassroots to getting athletes such as Becca to the Olympic podium.
Yeah. And the organization has become involved in Paralympics, has it not?
It has. Yeah, it's been really exciting to see the growth of Paralympics. You know, recently we've had mixed doubles wheelchair curling step onto the scene, and they're going to have their own world championships. So shout out to our entire para team and coaches and everybody who's been making a big push to make that more of a commonality within our curling world.
Yeah. And Becca, let's turn to you for just a minute. I interviewed your brother, Matt, back in 2018. So it's great to be able to talk with you and your involvement in Olympic. You were on the 2018 Olympic curling team. Tell us about your involvement there.
Yeah, it was an awesome experience. My brother and I actually qualified for the mixed doubles debut at the Olympics, and then my women's team also qualified. So we had a full load, but wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah. I would bet. What's your favorite memory from the Olympics?
You know, honestly, it's just something that I've worked so hard to become a reality, and to make it with my brother, who's helped me train every step of the way, was probably my favorite experience. Walking through the opening ceremonies, standing next to my brother, who's my number one supporter and number one critiquer too, I guess.
Well, you know, I have to tell you that I still I videotaped the final match for the gold for the men, and I still have it. And I've watched it a few times, and it's always kind of makes your hair stand on end a little bit when you watch how good everybody is at that level. So it really is a wonderful sport to watch. How'd you get involved? Well, Becca, I imagine you got involved maybe through your brother, or?
Yeah. So my dad actually started, and then my brother picked it up, and shortly thereafter, they forced me to go out on the ice. And back then, they'd try to get me to come down to the curling club, and I'd ask if anyone was going to be there because I didn't want to practice in front of anyone. So thankfully, I've grown out of that stage, and now it's just second age.
Well, the club you mentioned, the McFarland Rink, I have a friend, Dan Detmers, who you may know, from McFarland, and he's had me on that rink and have my had my hand at curling. And Matt's not in any danger of me overtaking him in the curling area. I can tell you that for free. Jenna, tell us about your background. You got a pretty good background when it comes to curling as well.
Yeah. So I kind of had the same experience as Becca, where my parents forced me into it, for lack of a better term. I remember, like, hiding in the lockers on Saturday mornings at the junior program, but eventually you meet the right people. I was lucky enough to meet Becca, actually, when we were both growing up in the junior scene. So we teamed up for a couple years. I played competitively on the national team for a few years and stepped away from the competitive side of the sport, and that's when I met our current CEO, and this position seemed like a natural fit, so I'm happy to be on board in this realm of it as well.
If I'm correct, you were a two-time U.S. junior curling champion, and I think you played in the 2018 Worlds competition as well.
Yeah.
Or am I totally wrong?
No, you're right. That's me. Same person. I've enjoyed traveling, and as curlers, we always joke that, like, even if you get exhausted and burnt out and want to step away from the sport, it's impossible. You know, it's just like the people that keep you coming back. And I think in the U.S., we're especially so passionate about growing the sport, and we want everybody to be a part of it and have a part of it and experience the awesomeness. So that's kind of how I got roped back into this gig. So,
What's the history of the sport? I don't know which of you, Jenna, do you want to talk about the history of the sport a little bit?
I can do my best. I mean, so it started on ponds and lakes in 16th century Scotland, and then made its way over here. And as of recent, you know, historically, we've seen countries such as Scotland and Canada consistently at the top of the podium. And now it's been really exciting to see the sport evolve and other countries get more competitive as the sport continues to grow. And now you have like Sweden, Switzerland, and of course the United States. So being part of its recent development has been really exciting to see.
Yeah. Becca, why do you think it's so popular in Wisconsin?
Well, I probably do it wear nice weather here.
Honestly,
Midwest, I mean, within a 30-minute radius of my house, there's probably three or four curling clubs. So for me, it was easy to pick it up and be able to curl, I guess, wherever I want. Right now, we don't have ice in Madison due to our restrictions here in Dane County. So we've been practicing in Arlington, which is a short 20-minute drive for us. So I guess it's just, I mean, Jenna, correct me if I'm wrong, but the most curling clubs I feel like in small radius are in Wisconsin, the Midwest, Minnesota, and it's nice to see it growing. Actually, now down south, Arizona has a great curling club. We had nationals in Florida a couple of years back, so it's nice to see it expanding. California's got a couple.
Well, and when I was trying to remember when it became an Olympic event. Jenna, do you either of you remember that?
Boy, you're really putting me on the spot here. I think in 2002, if I'm not mistaken, I think 98, it was a showcase. The word's escaping me, but it was a trial event to gauge popularity. And then I think in 02, it became an Olympic sport. And I could be completely wrong, so I apologize.
Well, I think you're right, actually. Man, well, somebody can call in and tell us if you were wrong or right. By the way, let's let listeners get involved. Are you a curler or have an experience to share or maybe a question about curling? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. You know, I'm sure there are people listening who are not really familiar with the basics of the game. So let's go back to the basics a bit. What are the basics to playing curling? And Becca, let's start with you.
All right. So curling teams are consisted of four players. There's the lead, the second, the third, and the skip. The skip is the captain on the team. They're kind of the brains behind the operation. And then your four players rotate with the other team, shot by shot. 16 stones are thrown in end, eight per team. And there's typically eight ends in curling, unless you're at the world stage or the Olympic stage, and then there's 10 ends. So then each end is similar to, I guess, an inning in baseball, so it kind of starts over after every end. And then you tally the score at the end of each end by the stones that are closest to the center.
Yeah, and there's one person is sort of sliding the stone down the pathway, and then there are others who can kind of sweep and either slow it down or speed it up, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. The sweepers, they actually can't slow it down, but they can make the rock travel further. The goal of being, I guess, a good sweeper is to have a lot of weight and friction on the broom. So the faster you move it, the more you're going to break down the surface in front of the ice, which is going to allow it to travel further. And all ice, everyone, this is a common, I guess, misunderstanding. A lot of people think it's similar to hockey ice, which, I mean, they're both ice. But curling ice has a pebble on it, which kind of gives it an orange peel type texture. And that's what we're actually, when we're sweeping, is trying to break down in order for the rock to travel further.
And what do you wear on your feet to sort of slide as you are sliding the rock?
So you have curling shoes. And then depending on if you're left-handed or right-handed or how you play your sports, one of the shoes has a piece of Teflon on the bottom of it to make it extra, I guess, slippery so you can slide on the ice. And then your other foot is a gripper to help you keep your balance, I guess. They're both Teflon would be quite the show to watch.
Well, I can tell you the first time I tried it with Dan Demers, I wound up flat on my back. That slide is really slippery. I trust that neither of you have ever wound up on your back.
That is not true at all.
You would be surprised with how much that happens.
Matt ended up on his back at the Olympics.
Oh my goodness me. Oh, fun talking with our two guests today, Jenna Martin and Becca Hamilton. Jenna's the manager of social and digital media for the U.S. United States Curling Association. Becca Hamilton, lots of awards, two-time national champ, junior champ, two-time national women's champ, an Olympian. So both these women are very, very accomplished in their field. It's great to have them with us. Join in with your questions or comments. Number to call 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer today, Nigel O'Shea, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Talking curling now with Jenna Martin and Becca Hamilton. It's great to have both of them with us. You can join in again. The number is 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. So let's take a call. Cindy in Appleton, we'll give you a chance. Thank you for calling.
Hello. Well, Appleton has a curling club, which I keep forgetting about. I'd like to get on a curling team, but can you just give us an idea of what all the fees are associated? Do you need to belong to, like, an association, the curling club? Is it a cost for teams and leagues? And what kind of equipment do you need, and what are the costs of that kind of stuff?
All good questions. Thank you, Cindy. Jenna, do you want to take that?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of clubs, obviously a little bit different this year, but a lot of clubs offer learn to curl opportunities, which is an afternoon where club members will welcome you in, kind of give you the rundown, tell you what to expect, and then let you actually go out and try curling. If you find that it's something that you like, each club currently has a different dues structure or payment structure. Usually those fees are discounted for first year members, first couple year members. And a lot of clubs actually have public used equipment. So if you don't want to invest in curling shoes and you just want to give it a try for the first season, you can actually just wear a clean pair of tennis shoes and they'll have a removable slider for you to use whenever you need it. They'll also have club brooms. And then if you decide that you want to progress, you can obviously invest into the equipment of your choosing.
And so what are kind of costs associated with normal play?
So that really depends on the club. I would say that you could expect your membership fee to be a couple hundred dollars. But like I said, your club, depending on first-year curlers, whether they offer like a specific league or morning access for those curlers, they might have like a come pay-to-play. So you just pay to use the ice for the morning in a learn-to-curl type situation. As for shoes and brooms, that can really vary depending on what you're interested in. For example, Becca has custom-made shoes, which are a little bit more expensive, but you could find a good pair of curling shoes for, I would say, around $100 or so, depending on what your needs are.
Becca, how much did yours cost? If you don't mind my asking.
Well, actually, so
north of $100, I'll bet.
Yeah, so I have the Nike Metcon shoes, and I transform those into curling shoes. So the Nike Metcons are around $140, I believe. And then to have them turn into curling shoes are another $100 on top of that.
So for something that – and those don't wear out quickly. I mean, you get a pair of those, and you're going to have them for a while, I would think, if you're – sort of the average curler who might, you know, come once a week in a league or something and play, they're going to last a long time.
Definitely.
Absolutely. We have a couple curling suppliers in Wisconsin, too. But if you buy curling shoes, so specific to the sport, they're made out of really durable leather. And I've had the same shoes for probably close to six seasons.
Yeah. So you figure it out on a per-season basis, and it's the cost isn't very much at all. Larry in Racine, let's go to you. Hi, Larry.
Good morning. My comment basically is I fell on my back also. I belong to the curling club here in Racine, and it's really a great sport. But besides that, it's the people that I fell in love with. And it's just tremendous. The camaraderie and sweeping is a hard job. It looks easy, but it's hard. And I just love the people. The curling people are, 99% of them are great.
Well, I thank you, Larry, very much for calling. So the people, I get that, but comment on that, Becca.
Honestly, I totally agree. The Madison Curling Club and curling clubs throughout, every curling club that I've been to, everyone's so welcoming. So even with those new curlers that Jenna's mentioning about those learn to curls, the members come together and they're so welcoming. Just getting into curling, the best part is after the game, the broom stacking, you hang out, you have drinks or dinner with your team and with the team that you played. And it's just, curling is honestly, it's just a whole different ballgame. I mean, it's a great, great sport to be a part of.
And Larry's involved with the Racine Club. Another listener emailed that they think Columbia County has the most curling clubs of any county in the United States. They have one in Lodi, one in Arlington, one in Poinette, one in Partyville, and one in Portage. You think that's a record?
They do have a handful of clubs up that way, and they're all, well, not all of them, but that's like the old school curling club feel that they have up there. You know, the two-sheeters, the small clubhouse, an intimate and tight-knit feeling you get when you go to those clubs. So it's a lot of fun to travel that way.
Yeah. Somebody else said in Sweden they call parents curling parents. I like that comment. Well, let's Larry, thanks again. Let's go to Al in Green Bay next.
Hi, ladies.
Al, hi.
And Larry. I used to work for a Canadian company. I worked remotely out of my home in Green Bay. And the very first time I went to Edmonton for training, I was up there for a week, flying back on Saturday. And they said, well, Friday night is our company outing. Come with us. And so I went curling for my very, very first time because I'm in Canada. And their companies have curling outings. I mean, why not?
Why not? Any of that happen here in Wisconsin, Jenna?
Lots of it. I'm located just outside of Milwaukee, so we've had companies such as Kohl's Corporate come in for curling outings, a lot of birthday parties, bachelorette parties we've seen up in the Twin Cities while we've been practicing, which has been kind of funny because everybody typically has the same idea. You know, you see it on TV and you think it's one thing, and then you step out onto the ice and it's a holy cow type of moment, and you realize it's not as natural as you might think. So it's been fun to see a lot of those corporate outings and parties and stuff pop up.
And as Larry mentioned earlier, if you're a sweeper, that is some work, isn't it, Becca?
Yeah, definitely. You get your heart rate going, and honestly, it's for like you have about 30 seconds while they're throwing their shot to lower it again before you're about to sweep again. So I think that a lot of people watch curling, and they don't understand, I guess, the athleticism and cardio that go into it until they give it a try.
Yeah, and those stones are kind of they're a little heavy. I mean, it's good that you're sliding them and not throwing them like a bowling ball, that's for sure. What do they weigh?
42 pounds.
I couldn't remember exactly. But obviously, once you get a little stamina built up, you can slide those 42-pounders down the ice. And pretty good, you know, do you have to be a very strong person to do it?
I would say no, it's more muscle memory and repetition. I think that once you get the feel for the ice, it becomes a lot easier. I think when people hear the 42-pound weight of the stone, they instantly get intimidated, like, holy cow, how am I ever going to move this thing? But like Becca mentioned, with the surface of the ice, the stones kind of glide along. Also, we have stick curling too. So if you are uncomfortable getting into like the lower delivery where you're in a half lunge on ice, can be kind of intimidating to some people. We offer stick curling where you're actually standing up and delivering the stone as if you're playing shuffleboard. So that's another great option for beginners as well.
Yeah, I was trying to think of what it might be like, but just to slide the stone down the ice, you know, you can learn to do that. But some of the, you know, I watched you, Becca, and certainly in watching the men play in the men compete in the Olympics, to the kind of spin and the way that you can actually make that stone kind of curve in and get behind another stone and so forth, or the amount of maybe geometry or math, you know, that is needed to exactly hit a competitor's stone and sort of knock it out of the way while putting your own stone in closer to the center. It's
yeah,
gotta
definitely.
Take a, go ahead.
No, I was just going to agreeing. There a lot goes into it that the viewers don't actually see right away. So there's two different turns. This is what you're talking about that cause the curl, the in-turn and the out-turn. The in-turn kind of makes it like driving a car, makes the rock go clockwise, and then the out-turn is counterclockwise if you're a right-handed curler. And then, like you were saying with the physics and things behind that, the angles for throwing takeouts and making sure the rocks are lined up to make the shot. There's a lot that goes into it that makes it actually more enticing for the viewer and for me as a player, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Maureen in Madison, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just wanted to mention that it was right that the 1992 was the demonstration sport. It was the French Olympics in Albertville, France, and I happened to be there, and it was interesting to see the French people in the stands. They didn't know anything about the curling, but they had all sorts of critiques of how the people were doing it. And then the other thing is that if people are concerned about lifting a 42-pound stone, you don't actually lift it. You just kick with your leg and push it down the ice, so you don't have to worry about lifting it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Maureen, thank you so much. Appreciate your call. Wayne in Poinette called to ask how the ice is prepared. You got a Zamboni out there or what?
Sort of. We have not necessarily a Zamboni, but we have a curling scraper to maintain the ice. So obviously you start by doing what we call flooding. So we'll put the markings onto the floor, and then slowly we'll add layer upon layer of ice. And then to prepare the playing surface, we have something called a pebble can. So it's like a backpack filled with warm water, and you have a hose at the end with a bunch of little holes punched into the head of the hose, I guess. And so somebody will walk along the sheet and essentially spray drops of water as evenly as possible to the top of the sheet, which creates the texture that Becca had mentioned before.
Yeah. Wayne in, I'm sorry, we had another call earlier. I mentioned that in Sweden they call parents curling parents instead of helicopter parents. I didn't add that. I should have. Because they clear the way for their kids. Oh, my gosh. And I guess if somebody at the level you two are at, your parents must have had some input in all this, too. Jenna, did yours?
They did. I mean, I would have never gotten introduced to the sport if it wasn't for them dragging me into the club. So, I mean, ultimately, parents do know best, I suppose. So, thank you. But I think Becca had a little bit different of an experience because she started when she was in high school, I think. Right, Becca?
Yeah, I started my freshman year of high school.
And who? And it was Matt that kicked you into it, or?
Yep, Matt and his coach. They just finished a Madison Junior tournament, and I was coming back from a soccer tournament. And I was forced to go out on the ice.
How's the U.S. Olympic team selected anyway?
So it's kind of a long process for curling, at least. So we have our Olympic trials here in the United States that you have to qualify for based on a point basis. So you go to tournaments. And at these tournaments, you earn points based on your finish. And if you have enough said points, or if you're a selected team, then you make it to the trials. And the trials typically, it can change. Last time around, it was a triple round robin. Is that right, Jenna, or a double?
Triple.
Triple round robin, and then you'd play the best of three games after the two came out on top from that. And then the team that wins that goes to the Olympics.
Wow, it's not an easy proposition to get to the Olympics, and I imagine it there that process goes quite a well into getting close to the start of the. Here we've got the 2022 Olympics. That's when would next be playing. And when do they announce, like, the 2022 team? When will that be, those teams, when will they be announced? Becca, go ahead.
Our Olympic trials are in November in Omaha.
Okay, and so the teams will have quite a bit of time to get ready for it.
To prepare for trials, yes. And then the team will be selected in November 2021, and then they'll have about 3 months or so before getting to the Olympics in Beijing.
Okay. So the different, there's a lot of different kinds of championships. And I'm wondering about colleges. How many colleges have teams? Do you know offhand, Jenna?
I don't know offhand. I've actually just become familiar with the College Curling Championships, which is very cool. I think it's growing rapidly. During this time of COVID, the chair of our College Curling Committee actually started a virtual championship, and I think that's piqued the interest of a lot of universities across the country. So hopefully we'll see some growth, and I can have some numbers with you next time we talk.
Robert in La Crosse, let's give you a chance. Hi, Robert.
Hello. Good morning. One of the things, I'll just answer the college curling one a little bit more. Those championships are really exciting, and I would say there's about 50 universities who actively field teams, college teams. So, mm-hmm. But that's not the reason I called. Arena curling is kind of a recent phenomenon, particularly for areas where they don't have a designated ice facility for curling. Lacrosse is one of those. And I think there's about 400 arena curling clubs in the United States. We have challenges where we have to convert the ice from hockey to curling, and that was mentioned before that ice is ice, but there's a different ice surface for those sports, and same for figure skating. So we share our ice with figure skating, sled hockey, regular hockey, and then curling. So our ice guys really have a challenge to prepare that ice the right way for everybody. But the arena curling facility then gives a lot more opportunity. Some of those clubs that are in places like Arizona and Florida use arena ice because that's available to them.
Yeah, and I think that'd be a great way to expand the sport because there's a lot more arenas probably than there are setups that are specifically for curling. Well, I tell you what, this has been a lot of fun talking with both of you. I want to thank you so much. It would be fun to have you back. Jenna, Becca, you can come back and be with us again?
Deal.
Definitely.
All right. And hopefully we'll have more good things to talk about. I tell you what, it is a lot of fun to participate and a lot of fun actually to watch, especially really good curlers play because they are really good. And Jenna and Becca are too, who are really good. Jenna Martin is manager of social and digital media for the U.S. Curling Association. Becca Hamilton, the 2018 Olympian from McFarland. Great to have them with us. And we're going to stay right on our sports theme and turn our attention to Megan Hart, WPR sports reporter, back with us for just a few minutes. I'm going to talk with her about the Packers and the NFL, and if we have time, maybe the Bucks. Megan, welcome. Are you a curler?
I'm not a curler. I grew up in Florida, so I was a swimmer on water, but not frozen.
Okay, well,
I have to say though, I curling is so much fun to watch. I'm not a little bit of a runner. I'm not a little bit of a swimmer. That's a try.
Yeah, you were breaking up a little bit, but I understand. You know, I watched the Packer game on Sunday, and I thought they played great. What'd you think?
Yeah, they did. You know, it was they really kind of showed that even though the Bears had possession of the ball a lot, that they could find ways to win. And they, you know, it's been a really fun season to watch the Packers just with how good their offense has been. You know, there's nothing really more fun. Maybe a good sack, but otherwise nothing better than a touchdown pass. And they've just been really on fire all season, and I know last season at this point in the season last year, a lot of people were saying that the Packers were very overrated and very lucky to be 13-3. But this year, they just look so good. So, it was a good game.
You think anybody has a chance of beating Aaron Rodgers for MVP this year?
At this point, I don't think so. If you look at his performance in the years that he previously won MVP in 2011 and 2014, his numbers are really right on par with those years. He's just been fantastic. He's got the Packers have had more touchdown passes than punts through the regular season. he's thrown four touchdown passes in seven different games, including on Sunday. He's leading the league in completion percentage, touchdown passes, passer rating. The Packers have scored more points in the regular season than any other team. So, you know, of course, Patrick Mahomes is a great player, and it really is a great time for quarterbacks in the league. But I think at 37, Aaron Rodgers has outdone them this year.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. And here we've got the playoffs now, and the Packers have got a bye. But what's the format's a bit different this year, isn't it?
Yeah, so the NFL did expand the playoffs this year. There are 14 teams that have made it, and in years past, the top two seeds from each conference had a bye week rather than playing a game the first weekend. This year, only the top seed gets that bye week. So it was a really big deal that the Packers were able to lock that up. And of course, it comes with home field advantage throughout the playoffs until the Super Bowl down in Tampa. Of course, home field advantage is a bit different this year. The Packers have yet to host 10 fans at any of the games at Lambeau Field, but it still, I think, makes a difference in that they don't have to travel. And of course, the weather at Lambeau Field could be a lot for for visiting teams to deal with.
For sure. I'm wondering, though, on the play, do you think the teams like the playoff format this year? How do they like it?
You know, I haven't really heard anything from players beyond Aaron Rodgers on Sunday talked about it, and same with Devontae Adams. They kind of talked about the importance of getting the one seed this year as opposed to in past years when the two seed would still afford them the bye week. I imagine, you know, it expands the playoffs, gives teams more teams a chance to compete, which is a big deal, and I imagine fun for fan bases to have their teams make it. And of course, it'll be fun to have an extra game, let's say, this weekend for just viewers.
For sure. Well, the let's turn to the Bucs quickly. What are they, 4-3, something like that, to start the season?
Yeah, they are 4-3. So not quite the blistering start they've had in the last couple of years, but they certainly, Giannis had 43 points last night. I think that, you know, despite sort of the mixed bag to start the season, things look pretty promising for the Bucks. And, you know, of course, we're talking about Aaron Rodgers possibly winning MVP this year. Giannis Antetokounmpo is the reigning MVP in the NBA, and I think, you know, it helps the team a lot that he decided to sign that Supermax extension before the season began, kind of answers some questions that would have probably been persistent throughout the season and take some of the pressure off. And so I am confident the Bucks will have another good year.
I am as well. Hey, Megan, thanks so much for taking a couple of minutes with us. Next time you're on, maybe we'll talk longer. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Megan Hart, our guest, our WPR sports reporter. She comes by every time we do a sports show. We talk sometimes a little bit, and sometimes we talk a lot. But we've got another sports announcer and reporter, Andrew Cotter, coming up next. And he's got a couple of dogs, Olive and Mabel. And we'll talk all about Olive and Mabel and Andrew next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.